You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met.
Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore, Albuquerque's number one D&D podcast.
We're actually back for part two of a two-part discussion about D&D inspired, et cetera, media. Is that the way to phrase that?
No. You're just going to let me roll with Albuquerque like it was nothing?
I just assumed that was a correct statement.
Oh, okay.
Is it not? No. Oh.
I might have lied to you, Josh.
Oh, no. I was genuinely excited for a second because I'm like, hey, you know what? I know Albuquerque. It's the place that every Looney Tunes joke is about, and it holds a warm place in my heart. And now you're telling me
a left turn.
Now you're telling me New Mexico doesn't care about two Canadian dorks talking about tabletop RPGs.
Yeah, they might. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
So for all of our listeners, just make sure that your friends in Albuquerque give us a good listen.
This was Chris manifesting our meteoric rise to Albuquerque's elite culturally.
Perfect.
I don't know who else is part of like what could be reasonably considered cultural elite in Albuquerque, New Mexico, but I'm ready to rub
elbows. Their D&D podcast scene is just got to be like crazy though, because there's nothing else to do in Albuquerque, I don't think.
Actually, that makes sense.
Today I wanted to talk, like last week we talked about a lot of adaptation stuff, the ways that Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games have been turned into other media, and I kind of wanted to continue that discussion but also get into some of the stuff that is less adaptation, I guess, and more of an homage.
Right, we talked about primarily movies and books, because those are real media. And then we got a little sidetracked by books, I think.
By Baldur's Gate 3.
That's true. But we're both, I think, originally book nerds.
Yes. Yeah, I think we're, like, I wasn't diagnosed for ADHD because I was that kid that sat in a corner reading books all the time because I needed to keep my brain occupied.
Yeah. My mom tells cute stories about how I would like go to friends' birthday parties and then just not participate because I was in the corner reading a cool book I found.
One of my first party experiences, and this is embarrassing to recount, so it should be good for content. One of my first like going to a middle school, high school party, I fixed the host's computer and then spent most of the party playing Myst. Just like off by myself playing.
Yeah. Because it's puzzles and your brain likes puzzles.
My brain loves puzzles and it also loves socializing, but it didn't realize that's what I was there for.
Yeah. I have 500 plus versions of, hey, this is cardboard socializing and puzzles.
Yeah, so
still undiagnosed. You can't pin anything on me.
But yeah, no, I think we both started as book nerds. I got into a habit pretty young of literally getting the biggest books I could find from the library. Like that's how I ended up reading most of the Wheel of Time series. Was just like I grabbed everyone that was out at the time that I started reading, because they were the thickest books I could find, and that meant that would last a while.
Right.
Before I had a chance to get back to the Stettler Public Library.
Yeah. That's interesting, because I'd like, as a young reader, I didn't read a lot of like traditional fantasy. So like, I read The Chronicles of Narnia. I read something called The Pilgrim's Progress, which if you grew up in a Christian home, you probably know what that is, and no one else does.
I've never heard of it. Is it good?
It's fine. It's fantasy, the Bible, kind of, right?
Okay. So,
Yeah. Again, that, yeah. I read a lot of just a weird amount of like humor stuff and like cartoons, or not cartoons, rather comics. And then it wasn't until I hit like junior high school and I read a Black Library novel, and that just like sent me down a path.
One of my favorite stories from my youth. So I was grabbing those Wheel of Time books and chewing through them. And I think I was on the fourth one when I went to the library, like my school library. I wasn't able to find a copy of it at the public library. So I went to the elementary school library to be like, hey, can I borrow this book? And the librarian said something to the tune of, I'm sorry, that's beyond your reading level.
Oh, and you took that as a challenge?
No, I took it to my mom, and my mom threw down.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I went back home, and I was pretty dejected because I was really hoping to get a hold of that book. And my mom saw that I was feeling pretty down, and she was like, hey, what's wrong? And I was like, a lady at the library said that my book is beyond my reading level, and she was like, get in the car. So she like drove back to the library and tore that lady a fucking strip. But
good for her.
I got access to the high school library after that, actually.
Yay.
Yeah. They didn't have the book either.
I'm trying to think of like any sort of serious reading I was doing at that age. And so much of my time was spent like on computers, which is weird. 'Cause like, I read stuff all the time. No, you know what it was for me? Don't ask how or why. It was a lot of Reader's Digest stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot.
The reason that I spent way more time in the bathroom than I should have. My mom assumed I was masturbating, but no, I was just reading Reader's Digest.
We used to go back to Ontario every summer, and there was a little cabin that we would stay at near my mother's parents' place. I don't know why I said it like that. Anyways, I've never once called her mother.
Let alone your grandparents. My mother's parents.
Yeah. My grandparents on my mom's side. Whatever. I'm not weird. And this little cottage just had, like, nothing. No actual TV service, no cable, nothing. It was, like, a block from the beach, but like there would be times of day where I'm just like, I don't want to be outside, like it's hot and whatever. And they had those like big bound leather Reader's Digest collections, and I would just that stuff. And like I read a lot of like, well, way too much, how do I describe this, technical like military documents.
Oh, dude, my poring over the user manual, like the instruction manual for the space shuttle.
Yeah,
that a year of my life I spent memorizing the layouts for all of those panels as though I was ever going to go to space, being a person who doesn't like to run very much.
I knew far too much about the Second World War Eastern Front, like specifically the Battle of Stalingrad, which for whatever reason, that fight, that siege fascinated me for years. Like how the Russians were able to completely stall the German advance and go on this like protracted urban warfare kind of knockdown drag out thing that turned into like everything sucks and we're eating our horses. And then eventually like the fact that they got stalled there sucked so many resources out of the rest of the fight that it actually turned the tide of the war. And then
tanks. what we're getting at is that we're a couple of fucking nerds. Like we are really dorky. And we really like to read books. So yeah, books took up a lot of it. Video games took up a lot of it, and then movies. But there are some other things that they make out of D&D.
Yeah, as much as I don't like to think about them, there are other things.
Have you read the IDW comic series?
No. Have I read anything comic-y? I don't think so. Like, okay. I've read other people's, like, clearly D&D inspired, like, webcomics, but...
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not supposed to get.
I'm pretty sure it was IDW. They put out hardcover books that were formatted in the same way as manuals.
Okay.
During the, like, early 4th edition days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were
better than they had any right to be.
Right.
Because, like, and I think IDW, out of all of the comic companies out there, they're the ones that I feel do the best job of adapting other people's stuff to comics. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, their Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles run, head and shoulders above everybody else who was doing Turtles content since the Mirage days.
Yeah.
Right? Sonic the Hedgehog? Fucking Sonic the Hedgehog. I do not count myself among the Sonic fandom.
Good.
The last Sonic game I played until last year was Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Okay, yeah.
In the 1990s.
And yeah, I think that's about right.
This past year, I picked up Who Killed Sonic the Hedgehog, which was their April Fool's game.
Oh, okay.
Right, like they did a point-and-click mystery game where you were playing as Tails trying to figure out who killed Sonic on a train.
Right.
And it was great.
I'm trying to think of anything else that IDW's done that I've read a lot of. Like
Transformers.
Oh, no. Did not do that.
Oh, you should, because their Transformers run is crazy good.
I bet I don't want to read comics. Like, I want to read graphic novels. That's what I want to read.
Oh, okay.
Their
Transformers run was so, so good. And, like, brought a lot of interesting character depth to the Transformers that, like, obviously they're missing because they're just a toy line.
Yeah.
And I found the same thing to be true with, like, the Sonic books, right? Like, the Sonic books that they put out actually made me give a shit about stupid Sonic the Hedgehog furry characters. Sorry to all three of our furry fandom. Because, like, normally I just don't. I don't care about Sonic at all. But those books, I read them with my son, and
yeah,
they were great. Yeah.
Yeah. Something about Transformers has just always bounced off me. So maybe, I don't know, if I find a good, like, graphic novel compilation or whatever, I'll pick it up.
Something about Transformers has always made me really want to like Transformers more than I do.
Right.
Right. Like, I was a Thundercats kid.
Okay.
In that era. Right. So, like, Thundercats right up until Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And then I was a TMNT kid all the way, with, like, a real strong leaning towards Ghostbusters.
Right.
But,
and,
like,
I never got to pick those sides.
Oh, yeah, you were too busy being indoctrinated or whatever.
Living in the middle of nowhere, mostly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did you grow up? Not that we want to put that on the podcast, but, like, shoot me a DM, because I don't even remember the name of the town you grew up in.
Oh, no, like, I grew up, like, just outside of Edmonton.
All right, okay.
Yeah, but I was on, like, an acreage, like, out in the, you know.
Oh, okay.
Sticks. Edmonton has gotten a lot closer to the house that I grew up in, that's for sure, but...
That's fair. Because, like, I grew up... The first 8 years of my life I spent in Calgary.
Right.
And so, like, it was really easy for me in grades, like, 1 and 2 to find nerd people to glomp onto.
Yeah.
And then in grade 3, we moved to the thriving metropolis of Stettler, Alberta. And... Everything that I liked was the least cool thing when I got to Stettler. So, like, I stopped being allowed to like cool stuff without facing consequences. So I just faced the consequences. Right. But yeah, up until like grade 3, I was a giant dork.
Yeah. And that's the thing. My dorkness, like, festered and developed in weird ways until I was like exposed to general nerd culture in like high school.
Right. I was talking about Transformers though. Like Transformers, G1 Transformers, like the first Transformers cartoons. I would watch them because they were on and I wanted to like them, but there was something about them that just like never really hit me right.
Yeah.
And I have watched every Michael Bay Transformers movie. Like every one of them. And I still want to like them. But they're Michael Bay movies, and I have a really hard time with it. And then, those IDW comics, that's the first time that I found myself, like, really deeply engaged in the Transformers thing.
Yeah.
But I think that has a lot more to do with, like, IDW's handling of character than anything.
Fair enough. But, so anyways, they made some D&D comics. They made a bunch of them. And into the 5th edition, apparently, too. I see that.
Yeah.
They published them for several years.
They did. I don't think that the 5th edition ones are as strong. The 4th edition ones had like a really tight group of like witty characters who bounced off of each other really well.
Yeah.
And then that kind of shifted, like the group that they were following changed into 5th edition. And I did not like that crew as much, so I didn't really follow past that.
Yeah.
But yeah, those 4th edition books, I bought all three of the hardcovers. They're gorgeous. The art in them is like crazy good, as it should be, because it's like a D&D product.
Yeah.
And like the writing was the thing that I was the most concerned about going into it, and I shouldn't have been. It was absolutely pitch perfect.
Yeah.
And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, it reminded me a lot of the movie.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good, because the movie was competent.
Yeah. Yeah, and like the writing was pretty solid, right? Like it was a tight-knit personal little thing, right? Like you were telling a few personal stories, but you weren't like, you were also dealing with like the saving the world nonsense that you kind of have to for a D&D thing.
But yeah.
That was really solid. And then, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say like, you know, since we're talking about D&D-inspired comics and stuff like that right now, I mean, like, I did read a lot of we'll call them just the Binwin Bronzebottom adventures that Scott Kurtz was writing for a long time. I don't know exactly what's going on with it now. I think he put the whole thing on sort of a big pause while he did this, like, Kickstarter to put out books about it, but that whole crew, I read a bunch of their stuff for a long time. I still read. There's a guy who makes something called The Weekly Roll and posts a lot of it to Reddit. That's all very D&D inspired.
Well, then you've got like the Dork Towers, like the classics, Order of the Stick, Rich Brilloux's work.
Is this still going?
I honestly don't know. I probably should have done any amount of research before we started this.
Right.
But, yeah, the last I heard, Rich was having some health issues, and I unfortunately haven't kept up since then.
But well, we wish him the best, but...
We do, yeah. His work was great. I really enjoyed Order of the Stick. And actually, I feel like one of the biggest things that we lost when Dragon Magazine stopped being, like, a published thing was like a platform for some of those creators to make stuff, because like sometimes Dungeon would throw out a really bad comic, but like it was something that a fan had made and it was vaguely the thing that we were looking at, right? Like it was vaguely D&D based and it was kind of a joke, and so they threw it in there, right? And if it caught, then they would like do it again. And if it didn't, then they wouldn't, right? So, it created a platform that, like, I don't think Order of the Stick would be nearly as big as it is without Dungeon Magazine or Dragon Magazine or Dork Tower. I don't think Dork Tower would be nearly the thing that it became without that magazine.
Yeah, for sure. Table Titans, that's what it was.
Table Titans. I don't think I've ever read any Table Titans.
Have you read Scott Kurtz's stuff?
very little.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, his vibe, but D&D crew. And, you know, also, it's not just, like, in-universe stuff. It's also about the people playing those characters. So, I think it's worth worth giving a look. They've got 4 books worth of content, is what they're calling it. That's how they're structuring the seasons. And this year, they've got a book series coming out for middle-grade readers. Sort of aimed at, it's the same group of people, but in a more kid-friendly setting.
Before Honor Among Thieves came out,
yeah,
I honestly thought that that would be the best way to handle a D&D movie.
Yeah.
Would be to, like, focus on both the characters and the story that's happening with them, and also the players and a story that's happening with them.
Right.
And Honor Among Thieves has proven me wrong.
Right.
And I'm pretty glad that they didn't go in that direction, to be honest, because it feels cheesy.
Right.
And I don't think there's any way to, like, get around that cheese.
Yeah.
Unless you're able to make both storylines, like, really emotionally resonant, I think it would be very difficult to get through that cheese. That actually leads me to, like, okay. This conversation has been pretty disjointed, and we've gone a lot of, like, different places, but, like...
That's us.
That's us. What do you think makes, like, a good adaptation versus a bad one? Really, what makes an adaptation, not just of, like, D&D necessarily, but, like, what makes a good adaptation versus a bad one?
That's a good question. Golly. I'll know it when I see it. okay. I think a bad adaptation winks at the audience too much.
Okay.
We both know what you're doing here, right? You don't have to be like, I remember this, Like, I think that, and I know I'm, like, anti-nostalgia, so that's maybe just a personal thing, but you asked me the question, so I'm going to answer it. I think when we say, like, adaptation, we're talking, like, something that is D&D-like, but, like, has the serial numbers filed off? Or are we talking about, like, putting D&D into things?
I would consider something that was D&D but had the serial numbers filed off more in the homage range of things. Like, I think an adaptation, and I'm not limiting this to just D&D stuff, but, like, making a TV series out of a book series. Is an adaptation.
Right. Okay. Right?
Making a movie out of D&D is an adaptation.
Right.
Creating Baldur's Gate is an adaptation because it's just like taking the idea of the thing and making a new thing out of it in a different medium.
Right. Okay. So then I guess for me, a big part of it is I want the project to take itself seriously. Like, I want it to believe the construct that it's creating.
Right.
And then if you're doing something like, and that's if you're adapting like D&D as a game into content, I think also then if you're adapting like D&D as a, when I say D&D as a game, I mean D&D like within the game. But then there's also like the bird's eye view of like D&D as a product and as a game and in the culture. And for me, any adaptation I see that speaks to something I care about, it matters a lot to me that they don't get any details wrong. If that makes sense. Like, okay, so people really liked the South Park World of Warcraft episode.
Did they?
They did. I don't know if you noticed, but people...
I'm going to take your word on that because one, didn't see it, and two, don't care about World of Warcraft.
I care about World of Warcraft. I saw the episode, and people were like, oh my god, they're talking about us in pop culture, we're relevant, whatever. And all I could, and this is probably just me being undiagnosed me, is I couldn't watch the show without being like, it's not how fucking World of Warcraft works.
Right.
Right? Like, if you guys want to, like, put the thing in the game and have people, or put the thing in your adaptation and have people, like, playing it or doing it, like, you have to do it correctly.
Right.
And I think most of that comes down to, like, someone on the project actually, like, enjoying the thing and caring about it and not just stapling it in there. Like, so many times you see D&D put into, like, TV shows or, you know, like, weird little movie clips and stuff like that, where, like, they're just trying to establish that these people are nerds, and, like, right, they're fucking doing it wrong.
<You know>? Okay, so you rolled a 5 on initiative, so you get to move 5 spaces.
Yeah. My barbarian is going to cast his rage spell, and I'm like, that's not what I fucking do!
Yeah. I'm actually, surprising no one, I'm going to take a bit of a different direction.
Okay.
Because I don't care about the details as much as I care about the soul of the thing. Right, like, I want them to catch the flavor more than the niggly little details.
Okay.
Right, so, like, I think where the Honor Among Thieves movie works, but Dungeons & Dragons the movie did not.
Okay.
Is that Dungeons & Dragons the movie had a very different idea of what the soul of Dungeons & Dragons is. Right? Okay. Like, it was taking itself too seriously. Like, it wasn't just that they were taking the subject matter seriously. They were taking the movie too seriously. And they were not really embracing the inherent goofiness that comes from the narrative form that is Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
And so, like, if Honor Among Thieves got things wrong, and it did.
Right.
I was more willing to forgive those because the soul of the thing was still intact. Right. Like, the fact that a druid up until the movie came out can't turn into an owlbear with their wild shape.
Right. Right.
Right. Part of me was like, that's sort of a weird thing to miss. And the other part was like, house rules, I'll allow it.
Right? Yeah.
Like, so for me, yeah, like having all of those details right matters less to me than making sure that it feels like the thing that you're adapting. That's also one of the big problems that I have with the Wheel of Time TV adaptation.
Right.
Is that it doesn't have the same feel as the books. It has, like, a late night CW series twist.
Yeah.
On the books. And it doesn't feel as grand as it should.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I would look at something like Game of Thrones has exactly the right tone in the first 4 seasons. Right. Like, it's exactly the thing that changes a bunch of stuff from the series.
Right. Yeah.
Not a 1-for-1. And a bunch of that stuff is, like, hugely plot impacting.
Yeah.
Right. The fact that, like, Lady Grey or whatever they were calling Caitlin. Appearance.
Yeah.
Right. But, like, she's a huge part of the books and she's just gone in the show. Right. Like, so that's a big change, but they got that soul so right that you kind of forget it. Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the biggest thing that a good adaptation has that a bad adaptation doesn't.
Okay. It's funny though, too, because, like, you're talking about adapting works of art that don't have mechanical rules.
Right.
You know?
I mean, that's so unique to D&D in so many ways, though.
Okay, yes, but it's not unique to, like, things being adapted from hobbies. Like, you know, look at, like,
Halo. Halo is a good example of the thing that you're talking about.
Right. Halo, Magic the Gathering, Warhammer to a certain extent. Like, obviously they file those serial numbers off, but every time they adapt one of those things, they just do some stupid thing that's like half-ass, you know? Well, that, like, annoys me.
The big one that I'm remembering from Halo, I only got two episodes into Halo. But the fact that he took his helmet off, the fact that Master Chief took his helmet off in the second episode.
Yeah.
I barely play Halo. Like, I have maybe a grand total of 5 hours of Halo under me.
Yeah.
But that annoyed me so much that I had to turn it off.
Yeah.
But that wasn't just because of the mechanics of the thing. That was also just because, like, you have clearly lost the soul of this thing. Like, this actor thinks that it is more important that we see his face than...
Well, that's not the actor. That is the studios. That right. is them saying, we need to bank on this guy, so make sure the audience knows who he is.
He should have been prettier then. he was fine, I guess.
Like, I'm so mean.
I'm sorry if you're listening to this. You're a very attractive man, but not attractive enough to take the helmet off if you're playing Master Chief, bruh.
You're going to ruin my chance to play some sort of Covenant. I want to be one of those big brutes.
Are you telling me that if they offered you that job, you would take it?
Yeah.
All right.
Are you out of your mind?
I'd probably pass.
Why?
Because it's so bad.
I know it's bad, but you get a chance to get paid real money to go pretend to be an alien on TV, like, as part of, you know, one of the biggest game franchises of all time. Who cares if it's bad? You have a story forever.
I guess. Yeah. See, as soon as you said you have a story forever, I was more on board. Getting paid to be an extra. Like, I know what extras get paid.
No, I'm saying, like, it doesn't cost you anything to do this. Like, they are just making it happen. Just my time and
my dignity.
Oh, dignity's overrated. Also, I'm calling BS, like, on just the idea that you have too much dignity to go and, like, be on TV for fun.
I wouldn't even audition for that role, is the thing. Like, they would have to come to me with it.
Yeah. I'm not saying, like, audition. I'm saying someone was like, you know, I know a guy who looks exactly like the Flood. Whatever. You know?
I don't know if that's a compliment or not. But like I said, I've only got about 5 hours of Halo under me.
Yeah. Well, it's not the best compliment I can give you. I'll say that. Anyways.
So one of the things that we did want to talk about, and I have a feeling that this is going to take up a fair chunk of our time, is that you and I think, are both of the opinion that actual play content is an adaptation or an homage.
Correct. I have listened to recordings of people playing actual D&D.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awful. It's so boring.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, just listen to someone flipping the pages in their rule book for a half an hour. That's actual D&D. Like, right. There's so much about D&D that, like, people don't realize is actually just, like, really boring because their brain deletes that part of the day. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, yeah, I played D&D for 6 hours last Sunday. I actually played D&D for 2 hours, spent an hour and a half dicking around and making fart jokes with my friends, and 2 hours correcting someone's rules error because I used a spell I'd never used before. Right? Like...
You and I play D&D very differently.
I'm just saying, yeah, no, like, the general tabletop experience doesn't really... I think there's something to be said for having a paid full-time DM whose mm-hmm. whole job is to, like, essentially write scenes that have fill-in-the-blank moments.
right.
where you get to role play for a team of professional actors.
Right. I have played in games that were more similar to D20 than a lot, I think, than a lot of like the standard D&D experience. And I think part of that is like I have a bit of a background as like a performer, and I have a fairly broad group of people that I can draw from to like put my tables together.
Yep.
And so, you know, you gravitate towards the people that are going to enhance your table and don't necessarily bring in the people who won't.
Right.
And so like you and I playing off of one another have had a lot of moments that would be similar to things that you would see in D20.
Sure.
But like, I think it's not the majority.
And I'm saying as a counterpoint to that, there was all of the times and nights where like we just weren't clicking or didn't feel it, or like we were trying to spotlight a character who just doesn't have the same like improv chops that we do and the same familiarity of bouncing back and forth off of each other, and things grind to a halt where you have to watch them think through the sentence they're about to say.
Yeah. And like I also get where like my play style can be occasionally very intimidating.
Right.
And so like people will clam up on that. Like there was one player at our table, I'm not going to name names, but there was one player at our table where I like tried to engage in an emotionally charged scene, and like I was starting to raise my voice in character.
Right.
And I watched fear appear in their eyes, like actual fear of me.
Yeah.
And then they stopped talking and we had to take a break.
So yeah. Like,
that is definitely something. And I have a feeling that there's more of that that happens in those shows than we see.
Maybe. I don't know. It's okay. I think it might be important to like draw a distinction between something like D20 and something like Critical Role. I think they are very different flavors of show with different levels of character and player influence into how they go. Speaking just as someone who has casually watched stuff, it feels like D20 is a lot more collaborative in the overall story arc and the freedom that characters are given to do unexpected things. And CR feels a lot more like one person has essentially written the rough outline of a story they want to tell and then taken scenes and had very specific objectives in those scenes and then let people like speak in character according to, I don't want to say a script, but like a guideline, right?
Okay.
It feels a little too, like, I don't know why I'm hesitating to just, like, talk shit about this guy directly, but it feels like...
Because you're going to be working with him someday, and you don't want to, like, burn that bridge now.
Okay, fine. You know what? I'm just going to say it, and because I don't want to work with him, I want to work with the D20 guys. It feels like CR is, like, Matt Mercer just sort of masturbating on camera for 2 hours. And then everyone else gets to watch and comment on how good he is at masturbating. Like,
okay.
Once in a while, there'll be a clip that circles on YouTube where a character or person says something insanely funny. And it's great, but the funny thing only happened within the context of like the conversation that Matt wanted to have with them in the first place. Right. It's just,
so I don't have as much experience with Critical Role as I do with some of the others. Like, I listen to currently Worlds Without Number and previously NAD Pod. and previously Dungeons and Daddies on my way to
work. Yeah.
Where it's like, I bus everywhere, and that is a great opportunity for me to just like zone out and listen to a podcast for a half hour.
Sure.
And my big thing with Critical Role, I keep bouncing off of it. And I think maybe it's just because I'm a bit of a completionist in that I want to start the story at the beginning. And I don't think the beginning is where Critical Role is the strongest.
Right.
But I have a really hard time suffering through the thousands of hours of content that they've created to get to the good stuff. And so my interactions with Critical Role are pretty surface level.
Yeah.
But a lot of what I see with that is that there's less editing than D20. Like I think the thing that really set Dimension 20 apart early and the thing that like catapulted it to the forefront of actual play stuff is just how incredibly slick it is.
Right.
Right. Like the characters are pretty consistently funny. The like scenarios that they're put into are sufficiently weird to capture the imagination and kind of hold it until you get into a place where you actually care about the characters. The editing is so tight. Like I don't think that I can overstate how important the editing is to making Dimension 20 work.
Yeah.
But it really, really is. Their editors are a masterclass in making sure that things are hitting the way that they should. And like that goes for their whole fucking crew, right? Like the sound editors, the video editors, the like camera people, everybody who is working together to put that show together are doing a fantastic job of putting a show together.
You hear that, but Carl Jimmer?
Improv show.
Disapproves.
But it is a show.
Yeah.
Right. And I recognize that as a show, it has very different goals and aims than a normal game of D&D. And the big one is me.
Right.
Because when I'm playing D&D, I don't have an audience.
Right.
The audience is just the other players around the table, the DM, or if I am the DM, my players.
Yeah.
Right. Nobody else is paying attention to me doing this.
Yeah.
And so there's a need to clarify. There's a need to streamline and provide additional focus.
Right.
In those shows that isn't there at a normal table.
Yeah. Well, and I just feel like so much of that comes down to like prep time and like, yeah, they're getting paid. If I was getting paid full time to just think about 5 hours of gameplay once a week, like, yeah, I could probably produce something close to that level. You know, you have the level of control and the ability to like you talk about flow charts. Like I would have every contingency plan for so that there wasn't actually improvisation on my part.
Right.
I'd be like the chess robot of DMs.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, like, I kind of want to take a step back from that a little bit, because I do think that the production schedule that they're under is intense. And, like, I know that, for Brennan at least, there is a lot of balls that guy has up in the air. Right? Like, he isn't just coming up with the like content that his players are going to be playing through. He's also like the executive producer of that show.
Right.
And so he's got like all of those responsibilities that he needs to maintain. Plus he's coordinating with the art team. Plus he's coordinating with like the director, right? Like there's so many things that he has to do. And my understanding is that they film them on a pretty tight schedule, right? So it isn't like coming up with like 5 hours of stuff for the week. It's coming up with like 12 hours of stuff for 3 days.
Right. And I definitely understand that, but don't think I think the ratio still works out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you've got a lot of, like a fair bit of time between sessions, like between your games that you can like plan things out, I guess.
And, like, yeah.
Shoots. But Yeah. Yeah, getting paid for it is definitely a big... We should just become rules as written guys.
Oh, we gotta stop dancing around.
All right,
this dude, and just take one full episode to air our grievances.
and then
never talk about him again.
I kind of like that he's like this weird specter in our podcast. Like, if you go back and listen to our podcast, there's a few times this guy just gets mentioned and then never referenced again.
Yeah. He's the phantom of the podcast.
Which is exactly what I'm about to do now. So, yeah. So, like, I do believe that out of all of the content that is an adaptation of Dungeons and Dragons, the actual play stuff comes the closest to being actually D&D.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's still not a real D&D experience, I don't think. But, like, if you want to get an idea of what it's like to play at a table, a very, very good table, a table that will set expectations far beyond what you should have for the DM that you're playing with.
I was going to say something along that line, because, and not specifically that, like, oh, the DM's not going to be as good in your personal game. The other players are going to just be far more unpredictable and shitty and chaotic in whatever game you find yourself in than what these people are producing.
Quiet.
Yes, so quiet.
Like,
just definitely quiet.
Interactions between player characters may take a lot more effort to get started.
Yeah, I was gonna say they just won't happen, but yeah, I guess we could be that way about it.
Yeah. But yeah, it isn't just like the expectations for the DM, I guess. It is also setting like some strange ideas about how interactive the game is going to be, and like how responsive everybody's going to be, and how funny everyone is going to be. Because like, these are just your friends.
Yeah. Right?
They're as funny as your friends are going to be. We know that if we're sitting down at a table with Josh, he's going to be gut-busting hilarious the entire time. And if we're sitting down at a table with Christopher, he is going to yammer your ear off about some philosophical nonsense that nobody fucking cares about. Like, that's just the way it works. And to take the expectations that you're seeing from those products and applying them to a home game doesn't really make a lot of sense. But I think that, like, it's the closest. Right.
Okay. Yeah. And, well, yeah. Okay, like, aside from like just actually having someone play D&D on TV, like, yeah,
which they shouldn't do because it would be dreadfully boring.
No, and you can even see like in Stranger Things with the parts where they try to put in like real D&D initially are just like, what are these dorks doing? And I guess maybe that was the intent, is that they were just trying to establish like, these are dorks and they're doing dork stuff. It doesn't make me feel good as like a fellow dork, but
but you're not supposed to. You're supposed to understand that these people are to be reviled for their basement dwelling.
That's mean, but yeah, that is also just how they view us. I mean, we talked about the problems with, you know, the adaptations of that you see on like Big Bang and whatever, so they're definitely laughing at you, not with you.
Yeah, Community put together one of the best D&D episodes of a thing, and Big Bang Theory can go straight to hell.
No, I think I'm coming around to your idea that like the strength of the adaptation is in the heart. And the intention behind it. You can get details wrong if people can tell that you love the thing that you're trying to do.
Yeah. And I think that's true for those two franchises, right? Like the folks on the Big Bang Theory, whenever they were mentioning D&D stuff, it was like, haha, look at the dorks.
Yeah.
Where the folks who were doing the Community episode clearly understood what playing at a D&D table was actually like.
Yeah.
Down to being like incredibly uncomfortable while a character seduced the lass at the stables.
Yeah.
That gave me some flashbacks to a lot of like actual scenarios that I had been in.
Yep, no ERP at this table, thanks.
All right, and then we've got about 10 minutes left, and I kind of wanted to touch on one of my least favorite, I don't even want to call it an homage because it's more of a insult.
All right,
to gaming, and that's the people who read Reddit posts about D&D on YouTube for
subscribes. Okay. All right, can we just talk about like YouTube and TikTok Reddit content as a whole? Sorry. YouTube and TikTok D&D content as a whole.
Oh yeah. Sure.
I'm not fully talked. I'm not a TikTokist. I don't participate in Chinese spyware. It's bounced completely off me. But
I'm actually surprised because it's like hardwired into my brain.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's part of the problem is that I've seen it infect friends of mine. And now I'm like, oh, no, I must avoid.
No, I do. I have to avoid it at all costs because as soon as I'm in it, I'm done for the day.
And the thing is, it bleeds into other avenues. And so they'll get me with the reposts on Instagram and stuff once in a while. But like there's so much low effort D&D content out there that just, I don't know why, but it seems like people are able to just farm entire careers off of like throwing a sheet over their heads and making a joke about wizards dying to 1d4 emotional damage. Like
while using a like vaguely insulting Chinese accent. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then like the outgrowth of that has been, I mean, I don't know if we want to like mention which guy in particular that really infuriates us, but
I'm not going to say his name, but like he's incredibly pretty and has a nice voice.
Okay. I want to he is pretty, but at the same time, not attractive. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yeah, he's got a half decent voice and he has figured out that or the algorithm has taught him that he can just read someone else's like tweet or Tumblr post or Reddit post and then do a really bad fake laugh.
And I don't think it's bad. I think it's actually really convincing. I don't want to give the guy props where they are not due. Because, like, he's an art criminal.
Can you please stop, like, just...
He's the worst person. But I do think the laugh is very convincing.
Stop complimenting him.
Okay.
I think he should go to jail for art theft. And he's the worst example of it, but he's not the only example. There's a lot of people out there now who can just, it's okay. There used to be a phrase to refer to like attractive people or whatever. Is that like, I'd listen to them read the phone book or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they've like actually found a way to make that a career. Except that this time the phone book is internet D&D posts. And it's like specific to D&D too.
It seems to be like, one of the weird things that I find about it is that, like, if you're going to find a weird Reddit post that somebody is reading for content,
right?
For a lot of the subs that you're looking at, it's going to be like an AI voice.
Yeah. Right? So like
the stuff about how humans are space orcs, right? Yeah. Like, all of that has like a weird AI voice as somebody is doing like a Minecraft parkour. And we get to hear about how awesome humans are at doing space war, right?
Right.
But, like, for some reason in the D&D sphere, it's always a person reading it out and then laughing at the end of it as if it is the most uproariously funny thing they've ever seen.
Yeah.
And, like, it gets a sharp puff of air out of my nose. right? Like, there's never been a time where I've read one of those things and actually, like, gut laughed about it. And so,
I mean,
like,
you're generous with your puff, because I've not once, like, cracked a smile or raised an eyebrow at one of those posts.
I mean, the hardest part is that I've already read them.
Right. Like, yeah.
It's really rare that they're, like, throwing something at me that I haven't already seen, especially.
Yeah, I already speed read it 2 days ago.
Yeah. Like, the guy that we're talking about seems to, like, sort by top of all time.
Yes. 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 So. That's his crime. His crime is not that he's doing this. His crime is that he's repeating these because we've already heard them in our own heads 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, I think his crime is that he's making a lot of money off of posting YouTube shorts daily where his only performance is his laugh.
Right. Right.
And again, like, you want me to stop complimenting him, but, like, the performance of the laugh is solid.
It's not, though. I disagree.
All of the framing for it is crime. And yeah, it hurts my feelings in a deep and personal way. I wouldn't say that, like, all D&D content on YouTube or TikTok is bad. Like, there are a few creators that I've seen that are genuinely trying to create instructive and informative content.
But then there's a lot of it that's just like, am attractive girl who does makeup costume change.
I can't remember her name, but I know who you're talking about. No, but like, there's one in particular, actually, that I find very difficult to engage with, so I don't. But their entire content is like creating outrage about WotC.
Okay.
Where outrage does not need to be had.
Right.
Right. Like, it's a weird misinterpretation of something that WotC has said or done. And then they'll go on like a hour long rant about that thing.
Right.
And then the next week they have another hour long rant about whatever news post WotC posted since then.
Right. No, my least favorite one is there is a fellow whose whole career is, hey, why don't you try this alternative rule in your home game? It's way better than the actual rules. And then without fail, it is the most cripplingly stupid thing you've heard in your life.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Because there is one guy that I can think of that I genuinely appreciate. Okay. He does YouTube voice.
Okay.
So, like, as soon as his face shows up in my head, I can hear, hey, guys, are you ready to do some YouTube voice?
Is this the guy with a vaguely English accent and a beard?
Sure is. And yep, his content is usually like, here's some races or feats or items that you may not have considered for your game or stuff that like is a little bit overpowered in certain combinations. And like, it's rarely super accurate, but
yeah, that's the man I'm thinking of and I hate him.
Oh, okay. Cause I hate the reading a Reddit thread guy significantly more.
Can we put the two of them just in a cage and let them fucking fight it out?
That would be hilarious. Or what we could do is put them both in a room with two different editions of D&D and see if they make a collab. Yeah. And then make money off of that, I guess. If they're going to steal art, I want to steal their art.
Oh, I just want them to inflict grievous bodily harm on each other.
But, like, it's the lowest effort version of taking a thing and converting it to another medium.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a podcast that is adapting D&D. That's not a thing that we're doing. We are talking about D&D.
Yep. We're talking around D&D.
Yeah. And, like, all of the other various games and things that we talk about. But, like, even if we were going to make a podcast that adapted D&D, I think we would do it in a very different direction.
Yeah.
One thing I've talked to you a little bit about that I'd like to kind of consider is like audio source books.
Right.
Right. Like just like here is some people talking about a setting that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And like all of the cool things that you would be able to find there or whatever. So like that would maybe be the direction that I would go in, because it is something that's actually creative
and yeah.
adds something to the discourse instead of taking something from the discourse and repeating it with my laugh at the end.
Right. It's beyond transformative. It is additive.
Yeah. And I wouldn't even consider like reading a Reddit thread to be transformative.
Well, legally it is for the purposes of not getting thrown sure. off of YouTube.
Yeah. But like, oh God, they're so bad.
Yeah. And there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them.
The movie only made it worse.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot, Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.